politicians have lying eyes. As sure as suffering multiplies, the rich will never be poor. As certain as in life you learn, the rich have money and time to burn. The rich will counsel you, wait your turn, in heaven you'll get some more. As sure as poverty plagues the land, the rich will give you a helping hand. As soon as mountains return to sand and oceans leave the shore, count on nothing in life so well that if the rich go straight to hell, lots are something they buy and sell, they'll never enter the door. Barely all that you need in life to be at peace in a world of strife, the company of a man, a wife, and lots of money in store. Life is simple and so complete, with faithful friends and some bread to eat, a solid roof and a room with heat, and stocks and bonds galore. The rich will probably tell you, nay, it's inner riches that really pay. The rich have always got lots to say as they watch their assets soar. Count on nothing in life so plain, the poor have water, the rich champagne, the market rises to this refrain. The rich will never be poor, the rich will never be poor. Life is a strange affair in need of some robust repair. The rich don't actually have to care. The rich will never be poor. Maybe people are all the same, but the rich are playing a different game. You take your chances and take your aim. You'll never even the score. The rich can't help it if life's unfair. The richer people, they really care. They often mention it's hard to bear. They're burdened at their core. Some say no, but it's plain to see. The rich are different than you and me. The rich are different as they can be. The rich will never be poor. The rich will never be poor. The rich will never be poor. The rich will never be poor.
Eat it the truth. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Robert Norris. This is Bathrobes Pierre's Broadside. Let me spread my thick blue terry cloth robe all around you for the next 3.5 hours so you can just snuggle up and hear some of Uncle Robert's bedtime stories. But no sleeping. This is Santa Cruz. And no sitting 14 feet from a building. No hacky sacking. No tabling 6 feet from a building and 10 feet from a crosswalk, and also no blocking the sidewalk, which means whatever the police decided to mean at the moment. We're going to be getting into a lot of interesting things that have happened in the last couple of weeks here in Santa Cruz. I've got my bag filled with interviews and tapes. We're going to begin, actually, with... We're going to begin with something from UCSC about a week ago. Not just the county employees are going out on strike tomorrow. As I understand it, there's strikes gearing up at the university. I'm a little bit not entirely up to the moment on this, so if anybody has more information on what's happening at the university and the potential strike or actual strike going on up there, that's something I'd like to hear about. I know UCSC comes back in force tomorrow. I guess it starts the actual quarter either, what, classes begin on Wednesday or something, or Friday. Anyway, it's happening very soon, and for activists concerned about involving students in different causes, this is a key time, although no doubt the increased bureaucratic police state up there is going to try to toss you off the campus if you don't have your little permits in order and your appropriate associations with student organizations. So beware, be there. Let's tune in here on this.
So we're here in the back of the McHenry Library.
Your ideas and suggestions will help find ways to overcome their unfair working conditions.
Your occasional
your unity with other working people will reap rewards that your children and grandchildren, strangers,
have been invited to speak on behalf of Downtown for All. The rally's been going on now for about half an hour. It's 12:30 on Thursday, September 4th.
10 to 15%. So I want to thank everybody for being here.
The fourth largest coalition of university employees yet. Every first Thursday of every month is going to be a meeting here until every worker gets a fair contract.
Everybody here is showing their support, and what we need is more people from Q to get involved. I know you all know people back in your office who are wishy-washy.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
We need to bring along the wishy-washy. No more wishy-washy.
Okay.
All right? One thing that was interesting about them saying at the bargaining session in the first week of August down at UCLA, they gave us an interesting little point. They gave us a set of articles with a few little adjustments in the language, and they said, okay, well, we'll concede these few little adjustments in the language if you buy this pile of crap. Well, we said, we don't want to buy this pile of crap, and they said, okay, then we're going to take away the system. Basically, that's what it came down to. They wanted to compile the articles with the minor adjustments into their proposal, which included this horrible wage offer, and expected to buy it. We said, no, we can't do that. They said, okay, we're out of here. Obviously, last week changed their mind a little bit. One thing I want to mention is, Martin, is this correct that the ballots for the strike are going to go out next week in the mail?
The official
All right.
ballots. We've already taken strike pledges, but the official
ballots. We've taken strike pledges. Some of you have signed them. The official ballots
for Q
are going to go out next week. Please make sure that you and your friends, anybody who is a member of Q, fill those out. Because we have to get a strike coming from here. UCB has done it. USF, I think, is coming up soon. We're looking probably within the first couple of weeks of October for anywhere between 1 and 3 days strike. So we really need to get our people here behind us and vote. Thank you. Union! We are 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 union!
Okay, I have a couple of speakers from the Student Union Assembly.
My name is Sabina, and I'm the organizing director for the Student Union Assembly for the undergrads, and I'm gonna be that position for the upcoming year. And
hi, my name is Leo. I'm the outgoing vice chair of the student government, and I just wanted to kind of talk about how students are supporting your struggle and that you're not alone, and how we see this struggle. To me, overall, this is a part of a bigger plan to centralize our campus, to centralize UCSC campus, and to do more with less resources. And stretch all the resources, stretch human resources, stretch your jobs, stretch everything that we have now for more, and basically so they can get more profit out of it.
That's right. Yeah.
In my experience on this campus, it's common to see people doing more than one job, doing two or three jobs even. And I know that when that happens, it's like the quality of people's lives go down, the quality of their work goes down, and the quality of their service goes down. And on our end, we get less for our money than what we're paying for to go here.
Right.
So, this is really through no fault of their own, of the people who work here. It's the system. I know usually a person wouldn't take an extra job if they're getting paid right for the one job they already have.
Yeah.
The effect is that the whole community suffers, like I said before, and on students, and we suffer as well. So it's important that students stand in solidarity with this union, and it's important to know that you all know that students are going to stand in solidarity when they come, when they get educated on the issue. In a couple weeks, 14,000 students are going to be at this school, and if they're educated on the issue, it's going to be a strong force to reckon with if we're in solidarity. Also, in my experience on this campus, they count on people not strategically organizing and planning. So this right here is revolutionary, and this is what their worst nightmare is. When students join, and when all the unions come together, like University Labor United, like this, it's going to be a force to be reckoned with, and they're scared. Honestly, I think that they have a vision for how they want this university to function in the next couple years. And if we're not at the table, I think the university structure is the people who are not upper administration are going to suffer greatly. And that means the whole community is going to suffer greatly. So it's important that students and workers are together at the table, united, helping to form that goal and so that they know how to keep our interests in mind, because if we're not there, they're not going to think about us. So,
my name is Thomas Levitt, and I'm running for Santa Cruz City Council. I just want to tell you all that just before I left her here, I got a call from David Silva, a man I've worked with for 10 years on Green Party and homelessness activism. And he called to tell me that the feds are busting WHAM. The feds are arresting Valerie Corral, and they're going to tear up their garden. And they want everyone possible to get out there and try and save the crop, try and tell their elected representatives that they don't appreciate this, that medical marijuana has been passed by this state, and that people who are sick and suffering don't need to be tortured anymore.
You're here.
I want to talk a little bit about coalition building. I'm a member of Downtown for All. I've been out at the Santa Cruz Peace Coalition protest on Friday, and there's a gentleman here who's had some flyers on both of those things, a little yellow flyer for the Peace Coalition thing, another one for the downtown protest that are going to be on September 9th at 6 p.m. There's going to be a march downtown against the downtown ordinances. What these things are all about is about the powers that be screwing the working people, the poor people, the regular people who make this country work. It's about the powers that be making it hard to be poor, hard to be an average human being in this society.
Yeah.
I would love it if people would show up every Monday at 4:30. That's when Steve Argue and myself, we're the only two city council candidates who are against the downtown ordinance. I just saw the responses to the scan questionnaire. We are the only two who are against the downtown ordinances, are against these ridiculous oppressions on people's freedom of speech. Well, Women International League for Peace and Freedom, they've been displaced from the place they've been tabling on a regular basis by these ordinances. These ordinances are designed to do social and economic cleansing on downtown. Right. They're designed to screw the average person.
Yes.
On behalf of the merchant class, the ruling class, we need union support, we need support from the progressive communities, all sectors, to let the city council know, the city council that voted 5-2, all five city council members are either still sitting there or are running for re-election that voted for this. I've been working on the sleeping ban ever since I got to Santa Cruz, along with David Silva and a lot of other people. Every single elected member of the city council has voted to sustain that ban. That ban that makes it illegal to be homeless and awake, homeless and asleep at night in Santa Cruz. It makes it illegal to be asleep in Santa Cruz. There's a sleeping ban on this campus too. And I know that there are a lot of students out here who are homeless and who are camping out, and they, like everyone else, are being driven underground. Like WHAM, they're going to be driven underground by the repressive forces that have only one goal, to turn everyone in this society into a commodity whose only valuation of human beings is their dollar value. How much dollars they can contribute to downtown, how much dollars they can contribute to the corporate economy. If elected, people say, I'm going to be the only person on the council who is advocating a true progressive agenda. Well, my answer to that is simple. One, I'll be a voice there. I'll be standing up there, and I'll be protesting unjust and hypocritical laws, and I will be developing a new class of leaders who can join me in 2 years and 4 years to put a true progressive majority on the city council. My website is at thomaslevitt.org/cc, and I have material, and you've seen some of my material, my core platform. Come up to me and talk to me. I'd love to talk to you.
Hey. All right.
Hello, and please welcome to O'Hare Airport Security. Kindly as to form a line along Route 90 toward Lake Michigan. Oh, the airport has a planner, so the rules are very tight. Place your bag there on the scanner. Whoops, you beep. Please step out to the right. First we'll frisk you, then we'll test you. And it won't be so bad if you should fail. Tell my friends I, if they arrest you, 'cause they've also spent time in jail. He will arrest you, a nation's checkered, but we'll keep you in the line all day and night, because we'll have a perfect record as long as no one makes their flight. Drop those tweezers and ditch those nail clips, because you know that they could form a threat to life. You can take them on your air trips, but you still can pack a knife. Yeah.
That was the Capitol Steps, their latest album, When Bush Comes to Shove. Not so bad. I'm afraid we may have a few bad ones in there because of all the patriotic hysteria all over the place that's going on the national front, the craziness, the frenzy. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. I'm Uncle Robert, and this is Bathrobe Spears Broadsides. And we have a call-in number here in case you want to call in. You've got some stuff for us, issues you want to raise, 427-3772. I normally get into civil rights and civil resistance in Santa Cruz to the way things are going for poor people generally and the whole infrastructure of laws that criminalizes poor people generally. And that's my topic. By the way, I also have in the studio with me the infamous and well-beloved Steve Argue, who's running for city council. You heard him a little bit earlier on the air, and he's available to answer a question or two. If you've got a question for him, you want to call in, you've got some thoughts. He's also going to make some commentary, but we only have one mic, unfortunately. It looks like one of the mics is dead, or the switchboard is dead, or something's dead here. And so, which brings me to the next issue, which means, it's a pitch, because we need equipment here at Free Radio. If you want to maintain the high level of quality that you're accustomed to on Free Radio Santa Cruz, you have to, in essence, pay for it in a certain sense. You have to contribute to it, because if you don't, it naturally deteriorates the way the old get older and finally pass on. And that's just what happens to people and equipment, both. So 427-4523 is the number to call if you'd like to give a donation or donate some old equipment or pass on a cheery greeting or public service announcement. Possibly you're interested in having a show, all that stuff. 427-4523, that's the number to call. If you want to be on air and talk with me and with Steve, 427-3772 is the number to call. 427-FRSC for Free Radio Santa Cruz, which is what you're listening to, 96.3 FM, and we're streaming on the web at www.microradio.net/FRSC. That's where, if you're lucky, you can catch us out of town. I think we're still limited to 5 or so people listening at the same time, but maybe that's been upped. I'm not too technically proficient, and have a talk to the V-Man and the other folks at the studio who know what's going on. But you can try that, and I know some people in different cities have been able to pick us up. And certainly in Santa Cruz, you should be have your dial fixed on Free Radio Santa Cruz. It's the only really non-commercial radio station here. Got a lot of public radio trash and even more commercial trash. And sometimes, I mean, I listen to other radio stations as well. But Free Radio is, if you can dump these, the punk music, of course. My feeling. Lots of interesting stuff, like the stuff that was on right before my show, the analysis of advertising and how it's it permeates the culture. Very interesting. I apologize for almost, you know, I had to interrupt it because of, I'm so much more important than what I have to say is so much more vital. But actually, that's recorded, and hopefully it'll be played at another time. You'll be able to hear it again. And I'll be able to hear it again, too. So, you were listening to some cuts from, I guess it was a week and a half ago, the same day that the Valerie and Mike Corral and DEA busted the two of them and their WAM, Women and Men's Medical Marijuana Club. This rally was going on campus, and looks like that not only, as I said, the county employee is going to be striking, but we have potential strikes on campus as well, which is really a good time for raising other issues, too, because people begin to realize that things are not rosy and that you have to unite to do something about them. And that's what we have to do downtown with Downtown for All, for example, which I'm going to be kind of rolling down to the mall, I think, after this show to maybe set up a table for a while at Cooper and Pacific to kind of get some input from folks, because I haven't been out there, and Downtown for All kind of had a series of protests that exhausted everybody on Monday and Tuesday of this last week, and then we had a changed meeting time on Wednesday, so few people showed up, and there, I don't think there's been too much tabling since then, but it's still an active issue, and of course the downtown ordinances were officially, they were on the books last month, but they officially became enforceable on September 12th, although I didn't see any specific instances of enforcement, and I saw a lot of people violating them. And what I did hear of, as I mentioned in the last show, was some sort of terror stories about police going after people for other ordinances, like blocking the sidewalk, which I'm familiar with because I'm going to trial on that one on the 27th for an incident way back on January 30th in front of New Leaf Market, which I've talked about endlessly. What was that, Steve? Yeah, there were actually five people who got tickets on September 12th for blocking the sidewalk. And I think that was Thursday. Today is the 15th, 14th, 13th, 12th. Yeah, that was Thursday. So, yeah, there were, and we actually interviewed those people on Thursday, some of them, and a witness. I guess you're a witness. Maybe I should, have you talked about that on your show? Or?
I talked a little bit about it during the debates at the police station on Thursday night by the Neighborhood Association, or Neighborhoods Association. What I saw was a man get a ticket for, he was standing just for a minute talking to a friend who was sitting on the planter right in front of Rosie McCann's, and when he sat back down, the police came up and gave him a ticket, and naturally he became angry, and he was saying all kinds of things about the pigs and stuff like that. I believe it was a little afternoon, somewhere right around there.
And was he blocking the sidewalk even for a moment?
No, he wasn't. He was just, not any more than someone walking down the street would be blocking the sidewalk, because all he did was get up and say something to his friend, and then sit back down. No, he wasn't blocking the sidewalk. But there was a whole group of people around the whole area. Some were standing around and stuff right at the time the police came up. These were people who are deemed undesirable by the city council and the police and everybody. People with long hair, probably a number of them homeless, and the police gave this guy the ticket. He's angry. Then, as he was saying what he thought of the police, one of the cops came up and put his hands on him. And there was a large number of cops. I wouldn't say huge number, but there was about five cops, I think. And then there were like two hosts and one CSO. And this cop came and put his hands on his chest, put his hand on his chest, and was right in his face, like he was really threatening to take some violence against this guy. And I said, wait a minute, this guy has a free speech right to say what he thinks of the police. You don't have the right to be putting your hands on him. And the police actually did back off. Right at that point, someone jumped at me and started putting their finger in my face. And I asked him to stop and get his finger out of my face. And eventually, by not even getting involved in the argument with him, he did back away and start yelling at someone else. But he was backing up the police, saying that this guy had was the things he was saying he deserved what he was getting from the police. So I did at first respond to him saying that no, it's this guy's free speech right, and then but then the guy kept putting his finger in my face. I asked him to stop doing that, and I just didn't participate in the threatening gesture.
Did this guy who you were defending continue to speak up his mind about the police, or was he effectively repressed?
Oh, he kept speaking up.
What sorts of things was he saying?
He was saying a lot of things that I don't know if I really want to repeat everything. I mean, you know, he was very angry. I mean, he had just gotten a ticket for nothing, and he was saying he's gotten about 10 tickets that the police have been harassing him up and down Pacific Avenue, giving him tickets all the time.
Did you see the origins of this episode? I mean, did you see where the police came from and the scene before the police arrived?
No, I didn't see that. I saw it right as the police arrived, and I had things described to me as to what happened just before.
Did you talk to the victim afterward?
No.
It's okay. You did. I just wanted to find out if you did or didn't.
I talked to him actually in the middle of it a little bit.
Because I actually talked to the man he was talking to. I think it sounds like the same incident. And I talked to the man he was talking to about 2 or 3 hours later when more tickets were given to a larger group of people for picking up change from the ground from a man who had done a handstand. And they were returning the change to him. Apparently, these police, headed by Officer Hoy or Officer Andrews, I'm not sure which, rushed out of the Pacific Trading Company and stung the apparently target group, which is on the planter there, right outside the Pacific Trading Company, Costa Brava area. And what's interesting to me was that they were not going after, apparently, the downtown ordinances that have been on the law on the books since August 23rd. For sitting and soliciting. The one for the non-commercial display has been suspended, but for accusacking, which I didn't see any of, and for unattended backpacks, other than mine, I saw no unattended backpacks, and mine was well attended, occasionally anyway. The fact is, however, the police were ready to crack down on other things, and that to me is the key to this. The key to this, I think people have to understand, is not the downtown ordinances. These are sort of incidental laws that are passed to back up the police. The really key resolution at City Council and again at the Downtown Commission is that the police strictly enforce all existing laws. That gives the police the power to pick whatever law they want and then just use it on whoever they feel they need to use it on.
Right. And one thing I'd like to say in addition, the police were accusing this man who they were giving a ticket for supposedly for blocking the sidewalk, which he wasn't doing, of being involved in drugs and selling pot. And the guy's like, well, you don't have any evidence of that. I'm not involved in that at all. And then the cop asked, well, what do you do for a living? And he says, I ask for spare change and spare cigarettes. And then she says in response, well, what do you do on your time off? So
trying to ridicule people for their lifestyle or what their life condition was at the moment. And, you know, I mean, I'm not terribly excited by people who spend a lot of time asking for cigarettes and spare change, at least some people. I mean, I was up out at the Capitola bookshop area the other day, and this guy was asking everybody and his mother for a cigarette. And, you know, I sat down and sort of watched this, and I don't think he actually got one. And I think it was a matter almost of principle. He was going to do it all day until he got a cigarette. And he wasn't abusive, but he was obviously not terribly happy about the situation, and it kind of made for an unhappy scene. But I didn't particularly enjoy it. But nonetheless, to have police kind of grill you and harass you for doing that seems to me the wrong way to deal with that situation. On the other hand, I don't have a lot of answers as to how to deal with the situation. I got to admit, honestly, I don't have a lot of simple answers. Perhaps you do, Steve. After you sneeze, of course. A brief sneeze in the studio. That was better. Now go ahead.
All right. No, there's no easy answers. We live in a society that has a lot of problems, and we're not going to solve all the problems by just not having so many downtown ordinances or anything like that. But the thing is that this guy being ridiculed about what he did for a living and being accused of something which fits into the cop stereotype of someone with long hair who's hanging out in the area, I think is part of the problem, though. No matter what he does, it's none of the police's business, really. To be ridiculed and to be stereotyped, and whole groups of people being stereotyped as being deemed the undesirable group of people, as opposed to those who are going to the Gap and other places and buying things made with sweatshop labor, and it's not a good situation when the police are allowed to, and in fact encouraged to, go after certain groups of people to try to drive them out of town, and they have been successfully driving some people out of town too.
Yeah, definitely. I think it's good to bring in that point. It was interesting the program you selected before this show, showing the total colonization of our whole society by advertising, is sort of an interesting precursor to this, and of course says a lot, I think, in a sort of a national or international scale about what's going on in Santa Cruz locally. And the real question, and maybe it's an impossible, not question to answer, but an impossible solution to give or a resistance to make, is how can we effectively resist this in Santa Cruz? I mean, a lot of us are, I'm going to be out there with my little table and my signs. I got some great new signs. I was walking around like the poster board man the other day with my Stop the Downtown Ordinances, and that was nice. But people are, busy. They've got lives to live. They've got jobs to go to. They can't come to swell protests, into the numbers that really they need to be at, though I'm presuming that the Iraqi war threat is going to hopefully get some of the folks who have been sitting it out, off the couches and into the streets, and hopefully that'll happen. There seems to be a growing number of people at the Peace Friday, although I wasn't there for the whole thing. That's at Ocean and Water Streets, for those of you who don't know, every Friday at 5 o'clock. And I guess there's a lecture tonight from 7 to 9 at 900 High Street on the Patriot Act, the second in a series. What's it called? War Against Terrorism, or Just More War, I think is the group that's throwing it. And apparently it's free if you haven't got any money, but they ask for a donation if you do. That's at 900 High Street, 7 o'clock tonight. There's also a Resource Center for Nonviolence sign-making party today, for those of you who want to go, at 2 o'clock, to support Amy Courtney, Cassandra Brown, and what I call the Bedshidista Barricadista Bandistas. I kind of admire what they're doing. I'm sure you've read about it. They got a longest story I've ever seen, probably the best story ever in the Good Times, talking about how they successfully are challenging the Caltrans American flags only, anybody with alternate messages gets torn down, sort of thing. And they've effectively, as I understand it, I thought they were kind of, so they won in court and they appealed it, and they apparently are now in a position where they're making more bed sheets to do an actual bed sheet hanging next Thursday, which they're going to do. But that's going to happen today at 2 o'clock, Resource Center for Nonviolence, if you want to help be in on that, at 515 Broadway. And that's something you might want to check out. Let's hear a little music, or something like that.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome to this meeting, which is of the utmost importance. But before we begin, let us please bow our heads and give thanks to the great Almighty One, the knower of all things, the omniscient one. All hail Alan Greenspan! Bum 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 bum. Mr. Greenspan,
yes.
Give us a clue. We buy our stocks based on the things that you do. You scratch your butt, so we're now surmising the stock and preparation age is rising. Greenspan, we heard you sneeze. Buy Kleenex futures from here to Belize. Robitussin's riding high. Mr. Greenspan, what should we buy? Buy, 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 buy.
I'm the mean man. I'll make it clear. The leading economic indicators based on thoroughbred acquisition of durable products show moderate rise in supply and falling demand for dry goods this year. I am so smart when I'm speaking freely. I explain the global ramifications of economic sanctions on emerging markets versus expanding market like I'm speaking in Swahili.
Mr. Greenspan,
what?
We're in a fix. Most of our stocks are dropping faster than bricks.
Here's the reason you're not calm. You know you'll be crying if the stocks you're buying have a name that end in dot. Com, 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 dum, 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 dum.
And more capital steps, more when Bush comes to shove. We just got a call.
From a caller here, and the caller is actually got some questions about safe sleeping zones for candidate Steve Argue. So I'm going to put Steve and the caller together. Now, no fighting, you guys.
Well, I certainly could use a safe sleeping zone.
Hi, Steve.
Hi.
This is Robert, and the other Robert. I had a few questions. This is weird, because I'm hearing you at the radio in delayed time, so it's a little, I have to turn that down. It's too confusing.
Okay.
And I had a list of questions. Most of them are easy, kind of no-brainer questions, but some of them are kind of a little bit more probing about safe sleep zones. And I was wondering if you would mind going into, you know, a little more depth. I know you're for safe sleep zones. Would you be up for that?
Okay. Sounds good.
So the first question is, why a safe sleep zone? That's sort of a no-brainer, but maybe you can, you know, say a little bit more about how you feel about that.
Well, I think we need somewhere where people can sleep. And, you know, right now there is no shelter for the vast majority of people who are homeless in Santa Cruz, and sleep is illegal if you can't afford the rent. So we need somewhere for people to sleep, and that's the main reason. I mean, we've got around 3,000 people in the area who are homeless, who have nowhere to sleep. So not sure if an outside camp with porta potties and dumpsters, everything ready, is the best solution. That would be one temporary solution. I think trying to get people indoors would be another solution that should be looked into as well, for temporary shelter for people who are homeless.
Mm-hmm. And if there was a, would you make priorities who would the safe sleep zones serve? Would there be a priority for families or for single men or, you know?
Well, hopefully serve as many people as we could, you know, and, the priorities have to be in terms of all the people who need to sleep at night, with sleep being illegal. I mean, we need some alternative. I mean, you know, we've got some alternative to, you know, what the city government has. They've just got a policy where it's illegal to sleep, period.
But there is the upcoming family shelter, And so it seems to me that there's that one segment of the homeless is being addressed. So do you feel, and I've heard from other homeless people that they feel that the families that the Homeless Resource Center prioritizes and gives preference to families, and they don't, and some people don't feel like that's fair, and that men don't have a place to sleep. Single men don't have a place to sleep.
Yeah, I think there's some.
Do you have any opinion about whether you think that is a fair policy, or?
Well, that's a hard question because I mean we're talking about resources that should be available to everybody. It's natural to want to prioritize children, you know, people with children,
right.
Because you know, I mean, they really need the most help. I mean, children need to be taken care of more. We need to take care of children in our society more. Yes, I think single men really are not getting the types of services they need and are being left out in many ways. So we need more of those services for single men. We see a lot of single men on the street, and I think in some ways it's kind of sad looking at society as a whole and a society where men are taken care of less, you know, and men are told not to cry as children and given less priority as they grow up, and we really need a different type of idea in terms of taking care of each other, I think.
But you still would give preference to families if, you know, with a limited amount of service, then you would still give the priority to women and children, right?
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense, but I think that really we could be taking care of everybody. And, you know, whether that be, I mean, I think temporary shelter is kind of a bad thing anyway. I mean, it's not a very desirable situation to be in,
right.
but it's better than no shelter at all.
Right.
And it's better than hiding from the cops and hiding from fanatics with clubs and things like that hate homeless people. I also put forward a number of solutions or partial solutions anyway in terms of rent control and other areas that would help house more people and stop some of the gouging of the landlords, which really causes a lot of homelessness as well.
Yeah.
And Robert wants to say something here.
Yeah, this is Robert to Robert. Hey, Robert.
Mm-hmm. The Bob.
You're Bob?
Uh-huh.
Okay, well,
whatever.
Yeah, I mean, you probably don't know about this, but there's, and this isn't terribly informative, but there's been a debate recently on the Sentinel Internet line. If you go to Santa Cruz Sentinel online and
mm-hmm.
you go to the letters section, and this is more for the information of those who are listening probably than you, Robert, you probably know about this,
mm-hmm.
which is Karen Gillette has apparently been having a lot of a dialogue with folks that I would customarily call anti-homeless bigots, but who also style themselves concerned citizens, and I think believe themselves to be, and probably are, you know,
mm-hmm.
in their own way. They don't agree with me, I don't agree with them on most things, but they're discussing the issue of a safe sleeping zone at the police station.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, an interesting discussion. They're kind of talking about all the different needs that, you know, and all the different concerns, and what about the neighbors, and how about the facilities, and,
right.
you know, how do you stop the numbers of people from coming and rushing to town to all sleep in the police station parking lot, that sort of thing.
That caught my eye.
Yeah, well, you already saw it then.
Yes.
But, you know, the main thing that they miss in that whole discussion, Karen Gillette included, is this whole matter came up and was thoroughly discussed to some extent in one of the subcommittees of the Homeless Issues Working Group, the Homeless Issues Task Force back in 1999,
mm-hmm.
kind of predates the Green Party's Homeless Issues Working Group. It was a $10,000 group. Most of the money, unfortunately, went to Don Lane, who was a staff person, and it wasn't homeless, and essentially sort of put the brakes on a lot of stuff and sideline stuff. But the fact of the matter is that this issue was discussed, and then Belcher refused to, he said there was insufficient security at night at the police station. That was his reason for not allowing, it's kind of hard to believe, but his reason for not allowing that kind of idea of a camping zone or a vehicular camping zone there. So if you or others are interested, you might want to also, you know, join that discussion, although, mm-hmm. again, my reaction to all these questions, you're not asking me, so I'm going to turn it back to Steve. He is running and I'm not. But my reaction to the whole thing is that you have to acknowledge people have a right to sleep at night. You cannot harass them for doing what they need to do. And that being the basic reality, do you want people sleeping in the bushes outside your office or downtown, or do you want to have there be reasonable places for people to go to sleep? And the argument that, oh, this is a wonderful seaside town, people are going to come to town and, you know, by the thousands and just crash in their vehicles in the area. This was the claim that supposedly defeated the safe sleeping zones in 2000 when a bigoted and a misleading Chronicle writer named Maria Gaura went around taking photos of the vehicles in the Harvey West area, claiming that they were all from Colorado and Connecticut and all these places, and they'd all rushed into town hearing about the Sugar Crone Fitzmaurice Byers safe sleeping zones. Mm-hmm. In fact, of course, an analysis by Becky Johnson that was rather elaborate in the article, she went to each of the vehicles and found out where they were from, and she found, in fact, that, you know, some of them were stored vehicles from people who lived here elsewhere. Some of them had just come through briefly, were heading out of town. That in essence, and I guess Texas Instruments out there who led the mob cry against them,
right.
And Rotkin, Matthews, and Hernandez, who then, you know, along with Wormhout, who got Byers to change your vote. So having interrupted you with that elaborate tirade, I return you to Steve Argue.
Okay. Hello, Steve?
Hello.
Yeah, so I understand what Robert was saying, but I'm still kind of, I am curious about some of these questions the conversation that Robert was talking about. It is interesting, actually, and I was wondering, did you get a chance to look at that conversation yourself, or?
Oh, this conversation
with talking about on the Sentinel thing?
No, I haven't seen that.
Okay.
The conversation with
who knows? Karen Gillette.
Oh, Karen Gillette. Yeah. No, I haven't seen that at all.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I thought it sounds pretty reasonable, and it, you know, kind of gets into some of the specific possible problems and what would you do about, well, first of all, do you think a safe sleep zone is a good idea for vehicles, or are you for that, or you think that that's not the main issue anyway?
I don't necessarily think it's the main issue, but I think it's an important issue, and I think it can be set up for vehicles with, if it's done right, if it's not sabotaged by the police, as it was last time it was almost attempted, before things were set up, before porta potties were set up, before garbage dumpsters were set up, and then when you don't have the proper facilities set up, of course you're going to have problems. So I think if it's done right, it can be a very successful thing. Of course, neighbors are going to have problems with people camping in the park right in their neighborhood. But I think if it's done right, it's not so much of a problem. And you know, you're not going to have problems with trash and so forth if you have dumpsters and monitors and different things like that. I'd like to see more people getting emergency shelter inside as well, mm-hmm. and you know, I think it's possible to do that as well, and I've been putting forward some proposals on that.
Do you have any idea about the costs of the different proposals? Like, you know, like, what would it cost? Well, what would be? Let's just take the outside one, just for whatever, as a starting point. Do you have any idea what it would cost to have enough monitors and porta potties and sanitation and all that?
Well,
and I guess there's liability and insurance and things too.
Uh-huh. I wouldn't know the exact cost. I just see it as completely necessary, and I see a lot of places in the city government spending where where money can be cut, such as the bloated police force and people in the city government who are making six-digit incomes. We've got certain programs like the CVC that does advertising for the tourist industry or certain hotels and stuff like that in the tourist industry, which really should be privately funded, not funded by our tax dollars. And so I think there's a number of places we could be taking money and channeling it into programs where we need that money to be put. In terms of monitors and setting up porta potties and dumpsters, insurance, I'm not sure what the exact expense would be.
Both great. That answered a lot of my questions.
And Robert wants to say something.
Okay.
Yeah, Robert, of course, we talked yesterday at the after the Green Party meeting.
Uh-huh.
And I know that you, I'm hoping in the future that, I know you've done a lot of research looking into how different official city documents have
uh-huh.
addressed, well, homelessness generally, and I assume to some extent they may have touched also on the issues of safe sleeping zones, car camping,
mm-hmm.
Lifting sleeping bans, that sort of thing.
I think in most of the reports, that's probably the primary thing that I got out of the reports is that preventing homelessness was the key to almost everything. Now, of course, you can debate how to do that,
mm-hmm.
But that seemed to be... Most reports actually did not think that emergency services did anything to help cure the problem of homelessness at all. But that doesn't mean that, you know, we shouldn't take care of each other,
mm-hmm.
you know. But it doesn't solve the problem. It would solve that are what you'd think, you know, jobs and drug rehabilitation and prevention. Making sure whenever development comes in that there's sufficient housing for the jobs that it creates, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, you know what? I tried to send you those links and those files I went to the HUP website,
mm-hmm.
and that your email, it bounced.
Huh. You know, how many, it depends on how big it was. I have an email that's almost...
Well, it didn't find your address. Robert at HUP.
No,
is that an old link or something? Or do you have a different email?
It's rnorse@hotmail.com.
Okay,
try that one.
Okay,
but try it sort of one at a time because I'm, as I said, they might bounce if you do too many.
Okay.
By the way, apparently the safe sleeping zone dialogue is now gone from the internet.
Oh.
I don't see it here. I'm looking in the Santa Cruz Sentinel forums, and it's no longer there. So
okay.
That's too bad.
Yeah, well, I know what you're talking about, though.
Right, but I mean, for other people who don't, you
right.
know, who haven't read that stuff,
right.
that's on the website, the Santa Cruz Sentinel online website. And, I mean, I know folks can probably contact Karen Gillette and get more information about this, and you probably could, too, Robert, if you want to talk to her directly.
Mm-hmm.
I guess my experience is that I think, you know, while it's true that it's better to obviously deal with the roots of homelessness and the causes of homelessness and prevention
mm-hmm.
as it is with drug addiction or anything else, the reality of homelessness is a lot of it has to do with lack of affordable housing and lack of jobs, I mean, of a sort that people can use, and the huge escalation of profiteering and the skewing of the economy in terms of real estate, at least that's my view, and the failure of the public sector and the private sector to build lower, you know, income housing, you know. My immediate concern is making sure that people who are out there have their civil rights respected, and one of those basic civil rights is the right to sleep unmolested somewhere legally. You know, it doesn't necessarily mean you get to park in front of someone's house for 2 years on a vehicle.
Right.
You know, and I appreciate that. And it doesn't mean you have the right to camp in front of someone's store forever, but it does mean that the merchants and the residents have no cause for complaint if they're going to say, the only thing we're going to accept is a complete ban on everybody. I mean, that's a completely unrealistic solution.
Right.
And then it's like saying, we don't want you to piss and shit in the streets, but we're not going to give you any bathrooms, which is a standard approach.
to homeless people in many cities. You know?
Did you happen to go to the Alice Walker thing? That was about a year ago or so.
I think I heard about it, but I don't think
I
went.
She was asked about, you know, she was asked about our homeless laws and what she thought about this and that. She goes, "Hey, you know, all of you out there, you know, get a blanket. Go give somebody a blanket. You know, take care of your. This is ridiculous. There's enough people in Santa Cruz to take care of each other.
Oh, yeah.
We don't need the government really to step in. And I mean, it seems silly. This is something that's very frustrating for me. I did something very naive a couple few years ago. I thought that it was possible to call people, especially it was during the Camp Paradise thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I thought was that people would be willing to share, you know, if they had a driveway or would be willing to take people into their homes,
mm-hmm.
You know, just for a week on a rotating basis, mm-hmm. you know, and get on a list. But everybody I called, even people that were like, you know, oh, I gave $200 to Camp Paris, or I gave him some chicken wire, blah, blah, blah. You know, what they wanted was, well, maybe I'll let somebody come into my house if they take a drug test, if they do this, if they, you know, do that, if they don't have any disease, you know, couldn't find hardly anybody who would actually, you know, take anyone in.
There is a kind of a...
I guess it was really a naive thing for me to even try to do in the first place.
No, I mean, it's a good-hearted thing.
I thought that, well, if you could get, I mean, it would only take maybe 100, you know, it wouldn't take that many people. Compassionate Santa Cruzans, a couple hundred.
But see,
they would just, like, rotating maybe a week or two would take somebody in. And then the whole thing would go away. The whole problem would go away just by
each of us,
you know.
Well, Scott Kennedy had the same proposal way back in 1997.
It wasn't a proposal. It had nothing to do with the government. It's just
he wanted people to take people in, and he said he was going to take someone in. And his wife vetoed the idea.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the reality is, I mean, I do not take people into my, you know, crowded space. I mean, I share a, you know, a trailer with somebody.
I'm not blaming people. I'm just saying that's sort of naive.
I mean, there's some people who do. I mean, I know one homeless activist who lets people camp in her backyard for, you know, and you know, there are problems that arise, but also there are satisfactions that arise. But, you know, then you get the situation where the guy says, I put up a homeless person, then he turned around and ripped me off, and so I don't want homeless people to have any rights forever. You know, that's the reaction, too. I mean, this shouldn't be a matter of private. The burden should not be on private individuals to do this. Although I'd like to see it, you know, if there was a religious revival of some sort where people really wanted to take care of each other more.
Yeah.
Steve, however, has some thoughts on this.
Good.
Yeah, I think it's difficult for people in a lot of situations, especially if you're cold, or you're not really cold calling people, but if you're calling people about people that aren't known, you know. I mean, you really should know someone before you invite them into your house. Then you have fewer situations of people being ripped off. And there are a number of people on the street who I wouldn't trust into my home. I wouldn't really want into my home. We made a mistake last month and had a homeless person over who stole some money from us. She paid us back, but you know, there are people on the street who aren't trustworthy, who have drug problems and other problems. You know, and if you look at the surveys,
people still have ways. I mean, at least they can have a driveway, or if you're worried about, I don't know, whatever. I don't want
to. Yeah, but I just wanted to say in terms of things like that, like people with drug problems. In terms of surveys, the majority of people on the street have been found not to have drug problems. The majority have been found not to be mentally ill. To not be either of those things. Although those are our stereotypes, but there are a large number of people who do have those problems, and that's why they're homeless.
There's a large chunk. I don't remember the percentage.
Right. But according to the surveys, the majority are people who are having trouble in terms of low wages and high rent and these problems we face. Robert wanted to jump in here,
mm-hmm.
I think a lot of the solutions do have to come from the government. They do have to be larger social solutions to what goes on. Although I do encourage people to help out homeless people when they can, You know, especially if you know someone and you think they're trustworthy. Mm-hmm. So, here's Robert.
Okay.
So help out Steve, who is currently homeless. Whether he's trustworthy or not, I leave up to you. He and Jennifer are looking for a place to live. In case anybody out there has a place, hey, how much can you pay? $500 a month? Something like that?
Or more.
Or more, yeah. I guess you got a couple of dogs, though, too.
Two dogs
and two surly activists. Actually, they're pretty good-natured. Listen, Robert, thank you for calling. As I've told you before, it sounds like you also have done a lot of research, and perhaps sometime you'll be able to kind of give us some thoughts on your research. And
sure.
Because even though it has been government, you know, sponsored stuff, and we have to look with a certain, I guess it both sort of the positive and the negative side. You know, I think your questions are very pertinent. You know, I mean, very practical. How much is it going to cost? Is it going to be a magnet effect? Which, you know, I don't think it would be, and you have to examine places where it's been done and see if it has been a magnet effect in Eugene and Miami, Florida, and Portland, Oregon, and Austin, Texas, places where sleeping bans were lifted or declared unconstitutional. My rather cursory research has been that it's not. But it's certainly, you know, and the research of the Homeless Issues Task Force and the research of the City Council's Subcommittee on the Sleeping Ban, 1998-99, when Byers led us all around the merry-go-round and then did nothing about the sleeping ban, but did a lot of research, was that there's no magnet effect. So you'll get Rotkin blathering on about there being a magnet effect, but there is no magnet effect. And what there is there's a bigot effect. That's what we got around here, I'm afraid. Anyway, I want to thank you for calling in.
Take care.
Give you the last word if you want.
I'm good.
All right.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome, welcome to this meeting, which is of the utmost importance. But before we begin, let us please bow our heads and give thanks to the great Almighty One, the knower of all things, the omniscient One. All hail Alan Greenspan!
Hello, I'm the world-famous plastic surgeon, Dr. Tommy Tuck. And I'd like to speak to all American patriots out there. You know, nothing annoys the extremists of Al-Qaeda more than a beautiful woman showing a sexy thigh on a warm beach. So I urge you to strike a blow for freedom with our New Year's liposuction special. But wait, there's more. We'll save your freshly sucked fat in our new cloning laboratory. Now here's a word from our spokesman, Bob Dylan.
Well, it used to be you'd smoke a lot of pot, but now it sort of seems your brain is shot. It used to be you'd party off the charts, but now you sort of need replacement parts. It is something that you can't postpone. Everybody must get cloned.
It smokes just like a chimney, I don't care.
'Cause when I need a lung, he's got a spare.
And I know this sounds a lot like science fiction. Yeah, but someday I might give this guy my diction.
My replacement parts are all homegrown. Everybody must get cloned.
Well, it's hard to be a copy of a copy.
He's not too smart.
And he's kind of sloppy.
For some reason, I have 27 toes. And I have to drop my pants to blow my nose. But me,
myself,
and I are right at home. Everybody must get cloned. Well, the House and Senate passed the cloning ban. Creating parts is not the job of man.
But cloning could keep these guys from getting burned. They could blame the clone for groping the intern.
If we support science, let it be known. As long as Congress is not cloned.
Thank you.
Okay, it's about 8:30 on August 22nd. We're talking with Hari Balav. And you have recently been ticketed downtown for a sitting ticket?
Yes, sitting next to a building.
And what exactly were the circumstances of that? How were you? When did this happen? And what was it all about?
It was at Alibaba's, like a little gazebo stand in the sidewalk, and we were sitting outside 7:30 at night. It was December, January. It was really cold. Nobody around.
The place was closed?
Closed. Place was closed. And because we were sitting in front of his serving window, although it was closed, we got two different tickets, not just one. One for sitting and one for sitting in front of the window. So total 324. By the time I went to court, pleaded not guilty. And even after I said not guilty, the judge
in the court of referee, God help us, Mulligan.
Right. And after saying not guilty, he said, I'll drop one and reduce the other to 100. And I said, well, I already pleaded not guilty, so why are you telling me this?
When did you get to court?
What do you mean, when did I get to court?
A couple months later? Or?
Yeah, about 2 months later.
And then what happened after you said, no, I'm pleading not guilty?
Then he said, okay, come back for trial. And then when I came back, then Sergeant Baker didn't show up. It was weird because a number of police officers didn't show up. And then they called my name and Baker, and then the other officers said, oh, we saw Baker. He said he's coming in. And then he didn't show up.
Never made it. Spell your last name.
D-I-A-Z. Diaz. Hari Diaz.
H-A-R-I?
Legal, yeah. Hari Diaz.
Now, are you a musician as well? What's your...
Yeah,
what's
I'm
your
a street musician. That's how I, you know, got the tickets and stuff.
And have you been down to Pacific Avenue since?
I was down there the other day, but I didn't play. And I didn't see what was going on.
Are you
so.
Concerned about the anti-homeless laws or kind of moving ahead, I should say, the laws? What? They call them downtown ordinances.
Yeah, of course I am. They're ridiculous.
Hey, Hari.
Okay.
You know, what I'd like to do is, any advice out there for folks who are trying to fight these laws or any thoughts?
I don't know. You got to know the law, first of all, I would say. Know the law and still, you know, do what you want to do. If you want to play music, do it. And you might have to, you know, you might have to push it to the line, but maybe it's necessary.
Any other reports about Sergeant Baker?
No. I heard he was nice to somebody the other day. That was a little unusual.
He is often nice before he gathers evidence for a crime. That's part of Baker's modus operandi. Thank you very much.
Okay.
And actually, here we are back on September 15th at the show, but that same musician was ticketed about a month before that interview for playing music downtown. And I actually talked to him. They threatened to take his guitar. He was very upset and very angry. And that was, actually, I think it was right before the Riley Porter hearings, right around that time. So, boy, you know, what's really important is for us to keep a record of all this. I've been derelict because I haven't been getting reports on the Huff Line. I get reports when I go downtown. And unfortunately, I don't seem to have the person power and organization to compile all those reports the way I need to. So if anybody out there has some time on their hands and an interest in the subject, I need people to help put these tapes into a written form for the upcoming October 14th Citizens Police Rah-Rah Board hearing. That's Citizens Police Review Board, for those of you who actually read their minutes. They, for the first time, are going to have a special hearing, take up 2 hours for public testimony, on incidents of this kind, 5:30 on the second Monday in October. The problem is that the staff at the moment is not going to be asked to present any data from the police department that would actually enable us to see if there's selective enforcement going on and to comment on it. I've requested of the chair, Mark Halfman, that he present this kind of stuff, but he's not going to do that for some inexplicable reasons, and I'm still encouraging him to change his mind. I'm hoping others will do the same, that what's needed are a series of documents from the police department indicating the addresses of the people that they're ticketing in terms of whether there's a kind of a homeless profiling going on. And we also need to know if there's been a change in police policy, whether there's any documents that indicate an increased crackdown on the mall, or whether and the kind of the connections between the police department and the downtown merchants, and what's going on there, the kinds of interactions that are happening there, but more specifically stuff relating to selective enforcement and police harassment that can be gotten from the police department. And when I talked to another member of the police review board, he told me, well, we've been trying to get a use of force policy statement from Chief Belcher for the last 2 years, and he hasn't given us, so you know, what makes you think we're going to get anything in 1 month? And my point is that the police department has a responsibility to make its records public, particularly to agencies that are supposedly oversight agencies. And if they aren't doing that, and if that gets on the record, well, then there's some justification for either court action or massive public demonstrations or meaningful pressure on the city council, though I have less and less hope for anything at the city council at this stage of the game, given the Rodkin, Matthews, Fitzmaurice recycled nightmare that we're in the middle of watching happen here. The three candidates that are probably, you know, they have the best resources and are most likely to win. I favor arguing Levitt and Phil Baer, for that matter, in spite of my differences with him on drug issues. He's come out against the downtown ordinances, by the way, which I commend him for, although I think it seems to me anybody with 10 cents worth of intelligence would come out would have come out against them 8 years ago in 1994 when Rodkin, Kennedy, and Matthews came out with them. And they're recycled ordinances, just like the candidates, from Seattle, which are intended to get rid of homeless people and circumvent constitutional problems by supposedly claiming they're just dealing with time, place, and manner restrictions on things. But actually, they're majorly impacting homeless people because it's the poor people that need to sit down, don't have the money to go to street cafes, do use the sidewalks for peaceful soliciting, and they, merchants and the gentry, want them gone. Well, it's a community we all got to live in. And, you know, we have to put up with the merchants' absurd advertising signs and their little trinkets and their crap. Well, we also have to put up with the folks on the street who don't have money and who ask for it. And I'm no more generous than the next person, but that's something that needs to be tolerated and dealt with and addressed, and certainly not prohibited. So let's hear a little bit more from the interviews on the street.
Gene, too. What's happening up there?
Well, I just heard about it. I didn't see it, but I heard the kids were all telling me that the police will just walk up and search you. That's it. Like, what's your name? Empty your pockets. Just like that.
Of course, you can always say, am I under arrest?
Well, I don't know what they say or what the kids know up there, but I know regularly they were harassing everybody and searching people at will.
You were actually up there recently?
I was up there recently, and everyone's saying the same thing.
How long ago were you there?
You know, it's, about 2 or 3 weeks ago.
And you were playing as a musician on the street?
I personally didn't play, but I was talking to the kids. And even since last winter, the kids were saying that the police were doing that more in Eugene. Just mostly kids. They never did it to me. I'm over 50 years old, but the kids, they just search you whenever they feel like it.
Thank you.
Yeah.
We're talking to an anonymous Capitola resident. Is that accurate?
Yes.
And you yourself have been following the situation out at the Mount Calvary Lutheran Church, where Camp Paradise, or as Dan White calls it, Camp Paradise 2, is now located, the Larry Templeton-led group that's a bunch of homeless folks who are doing community service work in exchange for the right to sleep and camp and survive. And you have some thoughts about what's going on out there.
Well, yeah, the first thought is, why are these people who walk through the church property on their way to the state park or to school or wherever, why do they feel that this is their God-given right to claim that trail for their own when the property belongs to the church and the church has certain rights to use it any way they see fit as long
as... Let me stop a moment here. You're not referring to the campers, you're referring to critics of the campers, as I understand it, who live nearby, neighbors who are critical of the presence of Templeton and the fact that the church is allowing him to have this camp there. Right?
Absolutely. The church has a right, as long as the county okays the permits, to have people camped out there. Now, if people have been using the church property to access other points, that's well and good, but the church owns the property, and I believe in property rights.
So in essence, you were telling me that earlier this is sort of an old entrance to the state park?
Well, it's a shortcut. It's a shortcut for the neighborhood so they can get to the state park. I believe they can get to a junior high around there. I'm not 100% certain, but the bottom line remains is that if you cross across someone's property to get where you're going faster, you don't have a right to manage that guy's property. That guy pays the taxes, or he owns the property if he's a nonprofit.
And you are, in fact, referring to the critics whose sons and daughters pass over that property every day, the neighbors who are, some of the neighbors who are critical of the church for having Templeton there?
Absolutely. If you're worried about your kids being in danger from Camp Paradise, there's a really good solution. Don't have your kids walk on private property past Camp Paradise.
Have you heard of anybody being endangered by Camp Paradise from the neighborhood walking through?
I have yet to see any evidence that anyone's been endangered from Camp Paradise. If you go talk with these guys and you meet them, they're like me and you, except they're down on their luck, okay? They're trying to get their life together. At what point as a society do we say, we want you to stop spending our Social Security and start paying into it as taxpayers? We need these guys working so they can buy my Social Security.
Hear, hear. So how many times have you been out to Camp Paradise and seen the folks out there?
I've been out there a couple times. If you look at it, this is a clean, neat campground, okay? Second point to the critics who claim that they trashed the river. Well, in this case, because it's private property, no government dollars will have to be used to clean up a mess after them. It'll all fall back on the church. But if you look at it, it's not an issue there, okay? Something else I want to point out, critics have said they've cut down trees in that riparian zone. Well, that riparian zone leads into the state park. The trees that have been removed are eucalyptus, which are invasive. So, in fact, they're really benefiting the state park ecology by removing these trees.
Now, you also mentioned that for those who are concerned about drug use, such as the use of marijuana, which I don't consider a problem, and the use of heroin, which I consider, or other hard drugs, a medical rather than a police problem. Has there been much of that as far as you know, and what's your answer to those concerns?
Well, first, let me state, you and I have to agree to disagree. I look at marijuana as an illegal drug. It's an issue, okay? But what you have to look at is what has happened when drug use has been found and what has been done about it. Everything I've seen is these people have been kicked out of the camp. What more could you expect them to do? They're not a police agency. They can't arrest these guys. Point two, I wonder how many people in that neighborhood have smoked pot.
Or perhaps use the more lethal alcohol and tobacco.
I don't know. It's all speculation. But the bottom line is, what would you have these guys do when they find there's drug use going on? How do they deal with it? Everything I've seen in the press and heard is that these people have been evicted from the camp. I asked the critics to decide, how would you have them deal with it? Would you throw the baby out with the bathwater? You have a group of people trying to get on their feet, trying to do what's right, and when they have a problem, they address it. You can't people are people, and everybody makes mistakes.
Yeah? I think that's, well... I appreciate this perspective, and anything you want to add before we close it down?
I've seen Camp Paradise at both locations. I've seen what the neighboring areas look like, and Camp Paradise does try to keep their area clean. I think a lot of the garbage that got pulled out of the area on the river might have been attributed to Camp Paradise, but it's important to remember, people have been living on that levee for decades. Yeah, and there's a lot of garbage in there.
Yeah, I don't think there were any murders while Camp Paradise was actually in residence. It was after they left that the area again returned to its rather more, haphazard and dangerous state. Thanks a lot.
You bet.
Let me add to this, because we're actually carrying this a little bit further, that you pointed out, anonymous nearby resident, or should we say interested person, that there was an incident in the paper that talked about a collie being attacked by a Camp Paradise Rottweiler. But the question arises, I guess, where was the Rottweiler and where were the collie? Were they, in fact, the neighbors sort of presumptively using the property to pass over and ignoring the property rights of the owner?
Well, absolutely. If you bring a dog into my yard where my Rottweiler lives, of course that dog's going to be defensive. This is the nature of dogs. Where were the dogs? Were they under control? What was going on? I think that you've got to take a look at that before you can say these guys are dangerous or there's terrible things going on. I can guarantee you, if you came into my house uninvited, I'd probably have a violent reaction too, and I'm not a dog, I'm a human being, but we all want our space.
And you, just to get some perspective, you are yourself no great fan of, you're not a great, you know, intense homeless activist who wants to see the downtown ordinances turned back and so forth. Let me look this way. Do you support the downtown ordinance?
I've got to look at them closer. I do believe that the downtown is a commerce area, first and foremost. I don't think that it should be a wide-open zoo, that everybody gets the right to sleep downtown or do this stuff. But at the same time, I am a proponent of property rights.
And, of course, the question is, for example, in the downtown area, it seems the merchants are trying to subsume for their own kind of private dominion the entire property there, as I think the neighbors of Camp Paradise are saying, we want to make sure that even on your private property, you don't do what we don't want you to do.
Well, the bottom line is, if it's public property, it's public property. If it's private property, it's private property. You've got to have that distinction, but ultimately, you know, the Camp Paradise situation, these people are on private property. Downtown is public property, and as such, we've got to realize that we can't exclude anybody from it. Now, we can't exclude dangerous activities, and I think it's worth noting, okay, I really want to stress this. Downtown was created for merchants. It was created for commerce. If we decide we want to make it into a park, then we've changed the focus of what downtown is about. So by all means, I'm not necessarily 100% in favor of ending the sleep down, okay? I'll tell you that straight up, but I do believe there's room to talk about it. And I think if everybody got together and tried to come up with ideas, Camp Paradise is a beautiful example of how to solve this, because churches have traditionally helped the homeless. This is what they've done since the time of Christ and before.
And I think, of course, the issue downtown is not the sleeping ban, but it has to do with simple use of sidewalks for other areas. It's already illegal to lie down on the sidewalk, and, of course, it's been illegal since 1978 to sleep anywhere in Santa Cruz outside, including the downtown.
With that said, I will give you my solution for the downtown situation. First, block off the traffic on Pacific Avenue. Give the street over to the bicyclists, the hacky sack players, the skateboarders. If you notice how people will tend to sit on a curb, they're going to be facing the street. Leave your sidewalks open for shoppers and pedestrians. You have plenty of room for people to play hacky sack, etc. And if the downtown association is with it, they could drag some portable half pipes down there and give us all some entertainment at the same time.
A shockingly radical proposal. I'm going to have to turn you into the local police. I'm sorry. Thank you very much. You want to give yourself a pseudonym?
No.
Why don't we call you Hornet?
The Green Hornet will do.
All righty, Green Hornet. Thank you. We're talking to Michael Schmidt, who is, goodness, he has his own company in town that is kind of moving to Arizona. What's your company?
Second Opinion Management Services.
I know 2 years ago you were hot and heavy into assisting homeless activists trying to change the sleeping ban, and, well, they're trying to change the camping ban, repeal the sleeping ban, and set up safe sleeping zones. That was an interest of yours then.
Well, I was definitely for, and I've said it many times, and even on the radio show KSCO that I sometimes co-host or host, that I do favor that we can't make criminals out of people for sleeping, and that the repeal of the sleeping portion of the camping ban needs to be done until and if and when the city provides safe sleeping zones for folks who find themselves without housing.
In Never Never Land, possibly in 2025.
Well, it may be that way, but I think you have to continue to fight. I mean, you know, everything takes years in this community to get anything done, and sometimes it still isn't done. But I think capitulating to the establishment is not the right way either.
I agree, and I've had a little problem with your KSCO connections, but I'm hoping that in the final days of your KSCO minionship, that you will stand up and talk about the sleeping ban and how KSCO conservatives need to come to grips with this issue.
Probably should, and maybe you can give me some good talking points to make sure that I'm I have a good debriefing to ensure that I'm giving my listeners, or the listeners, not really mine, the best benefit of the best possible information on this subject.
Well, I know that in the past you have approached previously hostile audiences in the neighborhoods in Santa Cruz, business organizations, and of course you've gone door to door and knocked on how many doors?
11,000.
And in the course of that, let's be candid now, were you willing to, you actually did stand up in favor of the right of homeless people to sleep, not just say, what's your opinion, oh, you don't think they should sleep, and then say nothing. You actually, when you heard a false information, or would you consider to be?
Certainly tried to, yes, because, you know, there were people that were very hostile when I would point, they'd say, well, we heard that you're for letting people sleep downtown, and they'd say, what I'm for is allowing people to have a place to sleep that's safe and legal and not making criminals out of people for the act of sleeping. And many times, not always, but many times, people were taken aback. They hadn't thought of it in that particular perspective. I said, you know, for the grace of God, it could be any of us here. And many times it would be renters who would make these comments to me. And I'd say, you know, your landlord comes today and doubles your rent. What do? Where do you go? Do you have a place to go? Would you have to find yourself, maybe even for a week or a month, finding yourself sleeping in your vehicle or trying to couch surf with somebody? So if you're in that situation, it's a totally different issue than if you got a nice, comfortable place with a roof over your head and, you know, a fireplace and food in the refrigerator.
Now, you are, in the course of your KSCO co-hostship, you've been helping Steve Hartman of the 12 to 1 noon show. You also raised some issues about social service providers. I know that you take the position of opposing the utility tax and supporting utility tax repeal in the city. Part of this is based upon your belief that the money that goes to social service agencies doesn't get to the homeless and poor?
I do believe that. I think that too often it's just a way to buy votes from nonprofit organizations who do make an effort, I believe, to try to serve different populations that they claim their mission's about. But if you sit down many times and look at where the money's actually going, it's going for staff and salaries and facilities and accountants and lawyers and all the rest of this stuff. And in many cases, 10 cents on the dollar actually gets to the group that they're supposed to be helping.
Have you done an analysis of any particular groups, like, say, the Community Action Board, perhaps?
No, I haven't looked at any particular group. I'm right now studying the city's financial report, which is a mind-boggling Arthur Anderson type of accounting system, I've noticed. I have noticed, though, that though the city in its budget says they spend around $2 million on social programs, according to the city's auditor, which the financial report is produced by, the numbers are in the $12 to $13 million range.
Go ahead.
Well, that's what I can't figure out is why the financial reports for the city show a budgeted amount 10 times what they claim in their annual budgets they're producing, and an actual amount of at least $1 million more than what they claim, what they're showing as their budget amount according to their financial statements.
Clarify that again for me, and let's give me an example.
The city claims they spend about $2 million a year on social service programs. If you go to the financial report, it says that they had budgeted over $12 million and spent almost over $13 million. So what I'm trying to figure out is some of that pass-through from other agencies and state or funding that they're getting that makes up that other $10 million bucks, or are we playing the old shell game with the accounting numbers again? They also show they got over almost $435 million in different types of accounts and stocks and securities and cash in the bank, and yet they're claiming they've only got $6.2 million in the reserve. So, I don't know how much of this may be for PERS or retirement. And this financial statement is probably one of the most difficult ones I've ever tried to analyze.
And you were in fact CEO of the Chamber of Commerce for a number of years.
Right? 4.
Now, let me jump back to something that interested me at the beginning of the summer. It was brought to my attention that the Board of Supervisors, which also faced the issue of repealing its utility tax, and I guess its utility tax was repealed, although I think that was done earlier by a court decision as well, if I'm not mistaken.
No, it was by the voters.
I know it was by the voters, but wasn't there some?
There's a court action still pending regarding if the county may have to rebate back to the voters the utility tax. Because, like Martinez, for example, in order to they were in the same lawsuit as the city county is. Their legal counsel said we'd be smart to get out of this because we're going to lose, and so they did reback.
rebate back to the households and the businesses, the utility tax they'd collected for 6 or 7 years at that point.
Because it was originally passed without a vote, without an act of the voters. Right?
Yeah, there's a constitutional provision that states that unless it's in your city charter that you're allowed to do things like have a tax on utilities, you can't do that. And City Santa Cruz, if you read their charter, has nothing about a tax, and the county did not on utilities. So they arbitrarily decided back in the 80s that, hey, this is the great revenue source for us, and implemented then a 5% utility tax, and then years later raised it to 7, which is one of the most regressive, especially on poor people, on low-income and fixed-income households, to the tune of about, on average household pays around $400 a year in the city of Santa Cruz alone when you look at all the utilities that they tax, which is everything from refuse services to telephones, cables, gas, electric, sewage pickup, waste management, you name it.
But what percentage of that, let's say, would come back to poor people in terms of social programs? How much per person would you think would come back to them? That's the other half of the equation.
Minimally, if I mean, you think about it, I'd have to sit down and give that some serious thought, but off the top of my head, kind of the back of the envelope kind of analysis, I would say that probably they're putting out $400, maybe getting 40 back.
I'd like to get some more solid figures. That's a very, of course, important question here, because the main argument of those supporting utility tax is that you're going to gut the social services here. And if you can, so what you want to show is how much is actually going out in social services.
Well, you notice that in the city's budget, they've already cut social services by 5%.
Police budget by nothing. In fact, they've raised the police budget.
Well, they're saying if the utility tax repealed, they'll be cutting police services, closing a fire station.
I doubt it.
And I don't know. I mean, this is what they're claiming. It's the old voters scare the voters to hell syndrome. Well, the reason I'm supporting the repeal of the utility tax is I want the city to focus on providing basic city services and coming back to the voters saying, you know, we've got this issue. We'd like to fund it. Here's how we'd like to have you help us fund it and get the voters' support for it. If you read the latest SCAN newsletter, for example, Christopher Crone talks about how he's so opposed to having businesses come to Santa Cruz to raise sales tax. He would rather figure out some way to tax services or the people of this community more to do the things that he feels that they want to do as progressives. And I think that's the wrong approach. The state has done a lot to take money away from the cities and the counties, and wrongly, I believe. And, of course, we got Fred Keeley and Bruce McPherson who have said nothing about it and done nothing about it. And neither of these state legislators, as a rule, have done nothing about what they've done to the cities and the counties' budget system. But the cities and counties have always been available to look to way that they can bring in business, bring in sales tax revenue. The utility tax brings in almost as much revenue as sales tax, which is really not